Hello everyone and welcome back. Today we are going to talk about the Olympics. Everyone knows last year we have the Olympics in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro. And today I have two special guests here with me. So guys, introduce yourself.
Hello everyone, my name is Jorge Rua. I'm an architect at Microsoft and I've been working here for 6 years. And I was the lead architect of the project.
And I'm Vinicius Xavier. I was one of the architects working in the Rio 2016 project. I was responsible for the non-functional aspects of the solution, such as security, performance. And I've been working here at Microsoft in consultancy for the last almost 6 years.
Cool. So guys, tell me about the website.
So Microsoft was a sponsor of the Olympic Games. And we were contracted to develop the official website. And the official website covered since the torch relay phase, which is 3 months before the competitions, and the as well as the games time and the post games as well. So we launched the website in May 2nd during the torch relay. We stayed live for the Olympic Games and also the Paralympic Games. And we shut down the website in the end of the last year. Website basically had two main content types. One is the editorial content, all the official communications around the Olympic Games was published in our website. News, photos, videos, everything.
It's almost like in a CMS, right?
Yes, we had a CMS for the editors to publish content there, and actually it was to deliver the cover, the whole cover, official coverage of the event. And the other type of content that we delivered was the real live results in the website. So all the competitions, scores, medals, records were published by our website. And during the briefing of the project, we established a common goal with the customer, actually a communication strategy, to deliver, to give to the whole world a sense of life during the competitions. And that was translated with a non-functional requirement for us of performance. So we had to be very, very fast on processing the results and showing them up in the website to really give the sense of life in the website. That was the website.
Cool. So I can imagine because the Olympics is maybe the hugest event, sport event around the world.
Sure.
So how many people connect at the same time and what is your estimated audience for?
Yeah, that was interesting. We had more than 200 million unique visitors during the Olympic Games, just the Olympic Games.
Man, it's huge.
Which is a huge amount of people. And We designed the website to support 200,000 requests per second.
Per second?
Per second.
Really? Cool.
That was the estimation that we've got from the customer. We also had an availability requirement very, very strict because we should be 100% available. That was our desire, of course. And supportability requirement as well was interesting because we had to support the website during the Olympic Games with a very, very tight SLAs to fix problems during games time. So this was the main three non-functional requirements that we deal with.
So in fact, what you guys delivered to the project in the technical point of view?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question because everybody says website, 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 right? But it's not just a website. So we built the website and we also built a web API to support the mobile apps, right? We didn't build the mobile apps. But we give them the information published in the website.
The back end and the information.
Yeah, all the editorial information, content like news, photos, we deliver to the mobile app as well. Of course, to manage the content, we had to develop a CMS, a content management system. And I think the most important, or at least the most critical system that we had, was a results processing engine, which was responsible actually to process all the results information and publishing the website. Of course, to deliver this website with this scale, we also built a monitoring system, a custom monitoring system, and a deployment system to make us as fast as enough as we need during the game's time, if we need to publish any fix or updates in the website.
Yeah, it's a very complex project, right?
So in the end of the day, it was a kind of distributed system, right? Not just a website.
Yes. Can imagine. It's very complex, not for the technical solution, for the organization of the team and the developers. Sure. Tell us about the organization of the teams and the developers and all the tools and the stuff.
I would say that technology is easy to manage and easy to... it's part of our job, right?
Yes.
But people are not, usually are not, right? Team was organized, team was very big. So we had at PIX more than 70 people working in the project, just in the technical team. In addition, we have the management team. And we had many different roles. In the project. So we had product managers responsible to manage features of the website. We had a business analyst, a team of business analysts and information architects. Those guys, they design page by page considering these four disciplines. So website, we delivered content for 62 different sport disciplines. 62, and we design page by page, figuring out what a fan of that sport discipline would like to see.
Got it.
During the games.
For sure, the guys who watch the football is different from the guy
volleyball
and the other
swimming. Yeah. So everything is different from the user perspective. Of course, we had developers, designers. HTML developers and testers as well, right? Besides the architects and dev leads. So it's a kind of a huge team. But there is one interesting thing in the team. We also had a very diverse team. So we had folks working with us from 9 different countries. So we had Russians, we had Americans, we had Indians, we had Peruvian, Brazilians. So that was a kind of interesting mix
of culture and diversity.
Yeah.
Cool. So can you share a little bit about the architecture? I can not imagine for a solution like of this size what you trying to do and what the challenges you had.
That was very interesting. I like to talk about the architecture. And we had a definition of this architecture, which is a kind of fancy name. So we had a multi-layer, multi-region, scale unit-based architecture. So let me explain.
that's a scientific paper.
Interesting. So it's multi-layered. So we had back-end and front-end. Back-end was where we have the systems and components responsible to receive information, to process this information, and to distribute this information to the whole system. Front-end, basically, we had systems and components to get this information and show the website, show the information in the website, right? So this is multi-layered. It is also multi-region. So as you can see here in this map, world map, we deployed in multiple regions in the Azure to get the resilience, to get higher resilience to the website. And what we did, we kind of virtualized the data center using the concept of scale units. So each data center, we didn't have just one set of components or front-end components, but we have multiple. And with this concept, it brings to us a kind of, actually what we want to avoid uncertainties. And a scale unit concept bring to us kind of confidence that we know the behavior of that scale units, of that components. So during games time, if we need to scale up the infrastructure, we just had to stamp another scale unit in the infrastructure, picking one region of the Azure, which solution is based on Azure, picking one region and just stamping another scale unit. And in fact, it happened. During games time, we had this situation and we provisioned new scale units in Europe, because we realized that most of the traffic was coming from Europe. Yeah. And as you can figure out, this is a whole distributed architecture, right? And thinking or talking about data and data consistency, that was one thing that we worked a lot, because this is a kind of system that is eventually inconsistent. Or it's eventual consistent system, right? Which means that all the components that we develop, we had strategies to develop in order to manage maybe some inconsistence of the data. So that's it. That's the multi-layered, multi-region scale unit-based architecture.
Yeah, cool fancy name.
Yeah, cool fancy.
So, Vinicius, I can imagine you are the responsible for the development teams and some kinds of DevOps and practices. So, tell me a little bit about the development challenges you had in the team, this multidisciplinary and multicultural team.
Yeah. Okay. One of the main challenges we had, in my opinion, was the size of the project. As George mentioned, we had 62 sports to develop, and each of the 62 sports had unique designs. So which implies that we had also unique page development and unique testing. And this increases a lot the number of features we had to create and deliver to the customer. And another point linked to this is how to ship things to the customer. It was a big challenge for us to deliver very quickly things to the customer so we could get fast feedback from them and change things on the fly during the development. Another very important point and another big challenge for us in the project was the timing. As you might imagine, the Olympics Games would not change the dates just because of the website wasn't ready.
Really?
But this is not just the website and the final dates of the Olympics Games as well. Our customer had a strict schedule before the games start. They had to test everything, and some of the tests they did included also the arenas, the equipment they used, and also the website. So they wanted to have the website many months before the games start. And I think that the combination of these two challenges almost forced us to have a big team working in the project, and also work with a very high degree of parallelism into this into the same code base, and without affecting any point around quality. Quality is a super important point for Microsoft.
Yeah, it's a non-negotiable point.
It's never negotiable. And for this project specifically, it was a little more important because since the Olympics is so important, it could affect the success of a failure of this website could affect also the image, the Microsoft image and the Windows, the Microsoft Azure image, and of course our careers.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't like to have any failure, any problem during development. In order to have a high quality, what we did was to put a lot of pressure on code reviews. We used the tools that Visual Studio Team Services has to do code reviews. And also, we worked with different environments. We have three main environments during development, which was one for the developers, the development environment, a testing environment, and a user acceptance test environment. So all those teams, our developers, our testers, and the customer could work in parallel without impacting each other and have a very fast delivery cycle for them.
Yeah, and it's a very complex environment for development. And yeah. How did you manage the code and the assets?
Well, we've used, as I said, we've used Visual Studio Team Services with the source code stored in Git.
Git,
and
right.
Yes. And to organize the code, the branches and deliveries, we used a variation of a very popular flow in the workflow for Git development.
The Git flow, right?
Which is called Git flow. It's one of the most popular. You can find very quickly in every search engine. So the basic idea is our developers used to work in separate branches per feature. And a feature in our scenario could be a set of pages related to a specific sport discipline, or in some more complex scenarios, like the components of the homepage, like the newsletter form or the menus. Since they were more complex and they had a specific branch just for that. And every time that we had a feature ready to be shipped, we had a dev lead looking to that code reviewing that, and in some cases doing even a small perf test on that, just make sure that we didn't have any regression or the messages were slower, and then the dev lead used to merge that into the main branch. After that, it's much very similar to what we have in Git flow. We used to from time to time in our project we worked with 3, 2, and 1 week sprints.
Okay.
So from time to time, we were merging the changes in development into a staging branch before going to test, to ship to the testers, our internal testers. And if they found any bugs, the developers used to fix that in bug fix branches, special bug fix branches, which could be merged back in testing and then from testing to development. And the same applies also for UAT after we ship things to the customer.
And there is a funny thing about performance tests that I don't know if you remember, but just in the beginning of the development, we started figuring out how we are going to perf test a website. And then we start perfing tests, our first sport discipline. At that time, we were developing the first one, which was marathon swimming. And website was like crappy because we didn't have anything developed, but we were perf testing. And then project managers came for us and they asked, why are you performance and testing the website? Website is not ready.
Yeah.
And then we said, that's fine. We can show results wrongly today, but we have to show them quickly.
Yeah.
So it's since important. The beginning, we started with this perf test stuff. And we had perf tests from the dev lead perspective, from platform perspective, so for our perspective. And then, of course, test team, they did a very good job on perf testing the whole infrastructure.
It wasn't part of the contract, but our internal goal was to be faster than TV.
So yeah, okay.
That was why we were so concerned about performance testing.
Yeah, because if I'm watching a game, and the TV shows the score. The score comes from your application, right?
Yes, absolutely. And there was one, and there was another interesting story around the final in football game. And Brazil won gold medal, right? And we had a friend in Brazil that was watching television, and of course following with the website, and he did a post in Facebook saying, I already know. And in the picture was like, you know, Neymar was, I think he was carrying the ball to kick off the penalty, to shoot the penalty. And he posted, I already know.
The website was already.
Because the website was already updated with Brazil medal, gold
it
medal. It was an interesting one.
Cool. For a huge solution as you created, so I can imagine you use a lot of different technology and a lot of different languages because We have some languages for is more focused on performance, and other ones for web design and this stuff. What kind of languages and technologies and you use it in the solution?
Yeah, we had many. The main language used in the both in the front end and the back end was C#. Was a ASP.NET MVC application and web API as well. In the client side, we used it was a very simple website, no single page application because okay. we had a very we were concerned about indexing properly into search engines. So most of the website didn't use any specific feature of any JavaScript library. We used, of course, libraries to localize the dates. We use a jQuery and the most common stuff that you can find on the web. The live results page were used AngularJS to do the fast updates on the screen. So we had screens updating every 3 seconds, 2 seconds, depending on the page. And of course, in terms of cloud tooling, we used almost everything you can imagine from Azure. It was completely a PaaS solution, so it was platform as a service. There was no infrastructure as a service, virtual machine managed by us. It was everything managed by Microsoft Cloud. We used very simple tools the most part of the application. We used cloud services, storage, tables, queues, SQLDB, and just a few of the more modern things in Azure, like Redis, like Azure Search, and Event Hub, for instance. For the development, we used even more things like Azure Web Sites for our internal sites. We used Visual Studio Team Services, as I mentioned, with Git. We used the coordination of the tasks in Visual Studio, the builds of automatic builds for all the development environments in Visual Studio. We had also some Power BI dashboards for the management team, pulling data from Visual Studio, connected with Visual Studio. What else?
Yeah, that I would say that Visual Studio Team Service was a key success factor for us. So everything was there. Everything was so
was
we
the
managed.
Source of truth.
We managed features there. We managed the code there. We managed bugs there. We had dashboards. So communication with project management and also customer was facilitated to use these tools. So this project management tooling was really a key success factor for us.
Cool.
And some of our open source tools as well. We used Elasticsearch and Kibana, Git, as I mentioned.
JMeter
for some small perf testing that we did in the beginning. The open source was part of the solution as well.
Yeah, and what do you use for continuous delivery and continuous integration? As you mentioned, Visual Studio Team Services, but any specifically plugin or something like that?
No, I think it was everything from built-in into the platform. One of the points we developed was our build system was self-contained. So the idea was, of course, to leverage the cloud to do the automatic builds, but we as architects and dev leads, we would like to have the ability to run from our machines into, if necessary. Remember, this website was a mission critical solution for the customer, so we couldn't rely completely on build servers and the cloud to do everything. We use it to ease our jobs, but if we needed, we could trigger builds and start building from our machines and ship the code directly to the cloud for deployment.
Yeah, during development stage, we have a fully automated build and deployment. But during production, of course, it was semi-automated, actually just based on some checklists that we did just to make sure that we are going to publish the right thing. So during development, we had our branching strategy was combined with our build system and also with our release system, so everything was fully automated. So as we press the button, as we start a build in Visual Studio Team System, we could build and deploy a new version for testing or for user acceptance. So it was fully automated. And it was key part for us as well, because as Vinicius mentioned, we had thousands of features to deliver, right? So we had to have this automated stuff to facilitate our job.
And how about the manage of the people, you know, the broken builds?
That was part of Vinicius' job, to establish this culture. And then this, again, technology is one thing, right? People is different thing. So when we talk about people, it's really how to establish a culture on yes. them.
And a culture of quality. I think everything yeah. starts with the quality. We had automated builds, it's one thing, and alerts. So I could see all the broken builds for every single commit in Git. So no matter if the developers did the build by itself or not, but when that commit arrived into the Visual Studio Team Services, it used to trigger a build in one of our build servers. Alerts has an important alerts are an important component of the culture. So people need to know very quickly and get a fast feedback about any broken thing into the solution. A fast feedback cycle with the customer is also important. As I mentioned, we had during peak times 1 week sprints, so the teams were working delivering very fast to the customer, deploying to testing environments, deploying to the customer environment so they could see what was wrong, give feedback for us so we could schedule a bug to be fixed into a future sprint. And also 100% of the code was code revealed. We were working with 35 developers, all of them very skilled. But even in this situation, you need code reviews. And yes. I truly believe that reading others' code is the best way to learn, to improve the quality. And we make sure that this was part of our culture in the team, especially in production. In production, no code went to production without my eyes and his eyes and, yeah. and the other two shift leads taking a very good look onto the code before going to production.
This make me think about how you deploy the solution. This is like a greenfield deployment. It's just the entire solution or just the features. What do you decide? And you know?
Yeah, it was we had a distributed solution. Of course, we had to make sure that the parts of the solution could work with different versions. So what we did was to use one strategy very popular as well called blue-green deployments. Our flavor of blue-green deployments was the single database model. So with that strategy of scale units that George was explaining, we used to drive the users to halt the users to half of the data center while we deploy to the other half of the data center. But in the end of the day, both groups were targeting the same tables in Azure Table, for instance. And this is the most simple way to work with blue-green deployments, and was important for us to have a website and a solution that could have 100% availability. Nobody noticed that we did more than 100 deployments during production. Just because of this way of working with deployments.
And what you learned and the results for this project?
At least for me, the whole thing that we did in DevOps and the care that we needed to take in development by making a solution, an application that couldn't break with problems in data models, for instance, it all gave us confidence in deployments. That's the whole idea. No, as I said, nobody noticed that the website was having a deployment, and we did many, many deployments in multiple components, sometimes in the front end, sometimes in the message processing engines,
with
no disruption.
200,000 people connected in the peak at the same time.
It's possible. It's possible. Yeah, possible. It's the one way to work with mission critical solutions. Having downtimes in the website was not an option. We wanted to provide a good experience to everybody. Even if we needed to fix something, during a marathon, during a football match, and we did this many times.
We did many times.
And in the end of the day, we got an amazing feedback from the customer regarding the availability and the speed of the solution. Our solution, according to them, was one of the solutions that one of the systems that didn't had any registered downtime during the Olympics and Paralympics games, which was a win for us. But in particular for me, the biggest learning and biggest win was when we saw the website faster than TV, as we wanted in the beginning.
Yeah, we learned a lot, and I think to me my key learning was first about people.
Yeah,
how people is important in a project like this, because many times we need their commitment, we need their really their working for the project, right? Of course, a project like this has some reasons for everybody, right? But people was one key learning for me. The other learn from the technical perspective is test. How test is important. So Vinicius and myself, we spend a lot of time testing the website and understand the behavior of each component. So during the games, I think we were so used to look at the code and to look at how the system behaves that we are very confident in the beginning of the games to support it, right? And also,
we had to build many tools to get this confidence. I built a tool to create broken models to see if the website would break in the situation of a wrong message being arriving into the system, or if we had any inconsistency in the data, because it was an eventually consistent system. So the idea was to try to break the website in a Chaos Monkey style.
Chaos Monkey style.
Yeah,
right?
Very similar. Not the same.
Yeah, but the idea of the
Chaos Monkey style. And also crawlers. We had at least 4 different types of crawlers going to the website, trying to visit all the pages and checking if everything was all right.
Auto-checking.
This brought us, especially the leads and the team, confidence over what we were building.
Yeah. And that was, I think that was part of our learning. During the project, we were realizing that we need to know and understand and test and perf test and disaster recovery test. That was also a thing that we did, and we did many times. We did just before the games. So just before the games, we switched our back end to our secondary region just to figure out if our disaster recovery
just to see if it's working.
If it was working, fine. Because that's knowledge is important, right? In a system like this, because it has many, many parts. And that was a key learn for me from the technology perspective and people as well.
Yeah, it's a great project. It's a success project. Anything else you want to add to the learnings or something you could be did it different maybe?
We had a lot of learning, right? A lot of learnings during the project. Maybe we can spend hours here talking about our learnings, right? Important things are, first, to me, first, people, for sure. Second, technology is important as well. So in a project like this, we had Azure, which is an amazing platform to run things like this, this scale. So we were very confident about availability. So we got 100% availability, which is amazing, right? Performance as well. So we had a very good performance because we had this platform. So to me, a key learn that I'm sharing with the customers right now is when they are going to choose a platform and a partner to give them trust on something, this is very important, right? Just in the beginning of the relationship. And choosing Microsoft is, you know, I think everybody knows what Azure is. And this is just one case that we have to support such scale and such hyperscale. Yeah. Website.
This is hyperscale.
This is
the real hyperscale.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you guys. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your time. It was
You're welcome.
Good conversation, and I hope to see you guys soon in the DevOps Dimension Talk.